This is Audible.
HQN Books and Harper Audio presents The Darkest Warrior by Gina Showalter, performed by Max Belmore. Prologue. Once upon a time, in the desert realm of Amaranthia, two immortal princes were born. Pukin Pak, Neil Brion Connaught IV, and Taliesin Sin Anwell Kunsnos Connaught. Brothers by blood, friends by choice, shapeshifters of legend, able to become anyone at any time. Puck, the elder, grew into a warrior unlike any other. Brute force his specialty. No matter the strength or expertise of his opponent, he remained undefeated, his skill on the battlefield rivaled only by his prowess in the bedroom. Sin, the younger, preferred books to battle and romance to war, though his military triumphs were no less renowned. He could scheme and strategize better than anyone. The princes loved one another, and each vowed to put the other first in all things. But long ago, the oracles of Amaranthia prophesied one brother would wed a loving queen and slay the other brother, then unite the realm's warring clans at long last. The oracles were never wrong. In the end, no matter the prince's hopes and plans, the prophecy would be fulfilled. Some fairy tales do not have a happily ever after. Chapter 1. Kill a man, acquire his magic. A tale as old as time. With a roar, Puck the Undefeated swung a pair of short swords at his latest opponent, the king of Clan Walsh. One blood-soaked blade hacked through the man's metal breastplate, sending him to his knees. The other sliced into his throat from front to back. No match for a Connaught prince. Who is? The king gasped with shock and pain, then gurgled as a crimson tide poured from both sides of his mouth.
Why?
With only a thought, Puck shape-shifted back to his normal appearance, letting the dying king see the true countenance of the one who'd bested him.
My brother sends his regards.
Puck twisted the blades and said, May you rest in pieces. The king gaped, wheezing a final breath before going silent, his head lolling forward. Puck yanked the swords free, and the body collapsed on the ground, flinging sand. In war, there was only one rule. Win, whatever the cost. Walsh soldiers retreated in a frenzied rush. A dark, glittering mist rose from the king's corpse and drifted to Puck. Potent magic adhered to the runes branded in his hands, curling gold symbols that stretched from fingertips to wrist. Pure power. Intoxicating. Nothing better. His head buzzed, the blood in his veins heating and fizzing. Because of the magic eye, but also because he felt triumphant. In a blink-and-you'll-miss-it moment, the newest war in a long string of wars had ended, and the Connaughts had won. Puck maintained his position in the center of the blood-soaked battlefield. Sand dunes stretched as far as the eye could see, broken up by the occasional oasis with towering trees and crystal-clear ponds. The realm's twin suns had long since vanished from the skyline. Night ruled, the heavens the same color as mulberries, creating an endless sea of dark purple-red. No stars glittered tonight. His eyes closed as he savored the victory. The odds had been stacked against him, with an enemy army more than twice the size of his own. So last night, his brother, Sin, suggested Puck sneak into the enemy camp, kill a Walsh commander, ash the body, and take his place. Not easily done, but done all the same. In his new guise, Puck had instructed the soldiers to ambush the Connaughts, and ultimately led the entire army into a trap. From there, reaching the king had been child's play. Sin could look at any situation, any man, and somehow discern every hidden weakness. Puck sometimes wondered what weaknesses his brother perceived in him. Not that it mattered. Sin only ever sought to protect him, doing anything, everything to ensure he won every battle. Together they would defy the prophecy spoken over them as children. One brother kill the other? Never. Puck and Sin would rule the five clans together, and nothing would come between them. A bond as strong as theirs could never be broken. As a cold wind spit sand, Puck opened his eyes. Despite the frigid temperature, he radiated heat, adrenaline pumping through his veins. Sweat mixed with the blood of the vanquished splattered on his torso, dripping down every ridge of muscle. In the distance, someone shouted, "Victory is ours!" Other cries followed. "The Walsh magic is ours! We've won! We've won!" Jubilant cheers rose, a familiar chorus. He trained with, suffered with, and bled with, and for these men. To Puck, loyalty was far more precious than gold, diamonds, or even magic. "Return to camp," he called. "Celebrate!" In unison, the soldiers surged toward the campsite just beyond the dunes, a sub-realm tucked inside a realm, hidden by Sin's magic. Puck sheathed his swords and picked up the king's blade, the perfect trophy. Pride lifted his head as he followed his men from the battlefield. More dead bodies and a surplus of severed limbs littered the path, the air saturated with the copper tang of blood and the stench of emptied bowels. Carnage never pleased him. It also never bothered him. He refused to shy away from violence. Threaten his people? Suffer. The day he showed a foe mercy was the day he condemned his clan to bondage or death. Remaining in the shadows, Puck slipped through an invisible doorway, only accessible to people who'd been branded with Connaught magic. For anyone else, the doorway remained closed. Oftentimes, men, women, and children walked past without ever knowing a sub-dimension existed, a mere arm's length away. Suddenly, tents, blazing fire pits, soldiers and their females surrounded him. The death stink evaporated, replaced by the aroma of roasting meat, hard labor, and sweet perfume. A maid spotted Puck and closed the distance, interest glowing in her eyes.
"Hello, Your Highness. If you be in need of a companion this evening..."
"Let me stop you there. I never go back for seconds."
He never forgot a face either. And he remembered he'd had this woman in the past year. Before he'd ever climbed into bed with a female, he'd made sure she understood his one-and-done policy. Disappointment shadowed her expression, but, done with the conversation, he sidestepped her and made his way to the fringes of camp, where he and Sin had both erected a tent. A cold move on his part, yes, but necessary. Puck wasn't like other royals. While most princes kept a stable and traveled with their fillies even during times of war, Puck refused to bed the same women twice. He could not risk promoting a romantic tie with anyone. A romantic tie would kindle hope to marry. No marriage meant no loving queen. No loving queen meant the prophecy remained unfulfilled. Although truth be told, Puck adored everything about the feminine softness he'd been denied most of his life. He loved kissing, touching, and the build of anticipation. Sweaty bodies grinding together, creating friction. Moans and groans and breathy sighs in his ears. The bliss of finally sinking deep inside his lover. Sometimes, a few hours in a stranger's bed only whetted his appetite. Deep down he had a secret, shameful desire to keep a woman all to himself, to learn every little detail about her past, all her hopes and dreams. He dreamed of spending weeks, months, years pampering her and her alone, branding himself in and on her, being branded by her. He yearned to have a mine. Maybe one day he could. No, never. Sin before women always, sin before everything. Tonight, the brothers would review the battle's successes and failures. They would drink and laugh and plan their next move, and all would be right in Puck's world. A thorny vine surrounded and protected his tent, no one able to enter or leave without his permission. Unleashing a tendril of magic, he forced the vines to part and stepped inside. When his brother came into view, affection punched Puck dead center in the chest. While they shared the same dark skin, darker eyes and even darker hair, the same aquiline nose and unforgiving lips, Sin's features were set in a softer frame. On numerous occasions, Puck had been told his face looked carved from stone. Sin paced, seemingly oblivious to the world.
"What troubles you?"
Puck's fingers tightened around the sword hilt. His brother had never paced, until recently. A month ago, he'd attended peace talks with a neighboring realm and returned, changed, from calm to paranoid, certain to unsure. He told Puck he'd woken the final morning to find his army slaughtered. He'd lain among the carnage, the only survivor with no memory of what had happened. Now he couldn't sleep, startled at sudden movements and noises, and stared at shadows as if someone hid within. He hadn't visited his stable and refused to remove his shirt during training. Puck suspected new scars littered his brother's chest. Did he think others would consider him weak if they caught a glimpse? If anyone said a single word against him, anyone would die. Whenever Puck expressed concern, Sin changed the subject. Sin paused before the crackling fire pit, his gaze finding Puck before darting away. Gradually, Sin relaxed, even grinned a familiar grin only Puck had the privilege to see.
"You took your sweet time returning to camp? Old age slowing you down?"
He snorted.
"You're only 2 years younger. Perhaps we should switch places for the next war. I plan, you fight."
"You forget I know you better than you know yourself. Worry for my safety would drive you straight to my side." Sin wasn't wrong. His brother could handle himself in a fight, whatever the weapon. He had no equal except Puck. But if anything were to happen to him,
"I will burn this realm to the ground."
Puck stalked to the basin of water perched atop his travel armory. After resting the Walsh sword against the side, he washed away the night's filth.
"When we were children, you worried for me,"
he said, drying his face with a towel.
"What happened?"
"You learned to use a sword." Sin rubbed his temples as if he hated the thoughts swirling inside his head. He needed a distraction.
"Shall we begin our review of the battle?"
"Not yet. I come bearing news." Seconds passed, each one crackling with tension. Puck stiffened.
"Tell me."
Eyes stark, Sin said, "Father announced your betrothal to Princess Alana of Dangin." Puck's first reaction,
"I will have a wife, she'll be mine."
Then he scowled. "Must proceed with caution." From a very early age, he'd seen the world around him through a near blinding filter. My brother, my clan, my realm. He'd seen Alana only once, and though he'd liked the look of her, he wouldn't deign to bed her, much less wed her. Temptation could not be indulged, even in the slightest sense. However, he comprehended Sin's concern. King, rather than primogeniture, decided a successor. Unless the king refused to make a selection, of course, then the strongest warrior took the crown. But with this announcement, King Pukin III had made his choice.
"Father spoke in haste," Puck said. "I won't be wedding anyone. You have my word."
"This is a political move meant to solidify the alliance between our clans, but..." "The prophecy." Sin's voice frayed at the edges. "One will become king with a loving queen at his side, and he will slay the other. The oracles are never wrong."
"There's a first time for everything."
He closed the distance to frame his brother's cheeks with his hands.
"Trust me, a wedding will never take place. Neither would wed, and the prophecy would remain unfulfilled. I choose you, brother. I will always choose you."
Sin remained as inflexible as steel. "If you refuse her, you'll insult the Dangins. Another war will break out."
"Another war is always breaking out."
Each clan collected magic from the men they slayed, desperate to possess more than the others. Magic was strength, and strength was magic. Sin broke away from Puck to worry two fingers against the dark stubble on his jaw. By wedding Alana, you will unite the clans as you've dreamed. Connaught, Dangan, Fionn, Adrim, and Walsh. How could he make his brother understand? Yes, he dreamed of uniting the clans. War would end at last. Lives would be saved. Peace would reign. Amaranthia would flourish, the lands no longer ravaged by near-constant battles. But concord without Sin meant less than nothing. "Nothing matters more than you," he said. Centuries ago, there had been 12 clans. Now, because of kings and armies greedy for magic, only 5 remained. If something wasn't done, the entire population would die out.
"Not to me."
"You aren't listening," Sin insisted. "Dangan now ally with Fionn. With your marriage to Alana, Connaught will ally with Dangan, so Fionn will be forced to side with Connaught. When that happens, Adrim, who is currently allied with Fionn, will have to break their alliance with Walsh in order to keep the peace with us, and they will. They have no familial ties with Walsh, and now that the current, or rather former, Walsh king is dead, the new ruler has a clean slate with us."
"I don't care," he said with a shake of his head. "The cost is too high."
Silent, Sin studied the way he often studied his favorite maps. Sadness darkened his eyes until it was snuffed out by determination. He nodded as if making a monumental decision and motioned to the table in the corner. In the center rested what looked to be a small trinket case. "It arrived this morning," Sin said, "just before battle."
"A gift?"
"A weapon."
"Weapon?" "Worry not, I'll take care of it."
Puck would do anything, kill anyone to fix his brother's problems. Fair was fair. Sin had always fixed his. He crossed the tent to stand before the little case. Mother of pearl overlaid some kind of metal. A cluster of diamonds glittered at each corner. As he reached out, a pulse of malevolence brushed his skin. Not magic, but pure, unadulterated evil. His blood flashed ice cold.
"Who sent it?"
And what type of weapon was it exactly?
"A woman named Keely Kyle, with the title of Red Queen. She said she hopes we enjoy our downfall."
Keely Kyle. He'd never heard of her.
"Does she rule a neighboring realm?"
To Puck's knowledge, a woman had never led anything. Not outright, anyway. Females aided their kings.
"I'm unsure," Sin said.
The answer hardly mattered, he supposed. No one threatened his brother and lived. Downfall? Not while Puck lived and breathed. Sin hadn't just saved his life too many times to count. He'd saved Puck's soul. Just before Puck's 7th birthday, his cousin died in battle. Needing a new commander from the royal line, the king chose Puck. Meaning, a little prince was ripped from his mother's arms sooner rather than later, so that a woman's sweetness would no longer influence him.
"Ruin a boy and you ruin the man he will become."
The words his father had shouted at his mother the day Puck was taken.
"I'll go too," 5-year-old Sin had said. "Where you go, I go."
The details of that fateful day were forever branded into Puck's memory. How their mother's sobs could be heard throughout the fortress. "My babies, please don't take my babies." How tears had streamed down Sin's face as he'd taken Puck's hand and willingly walked away from the only home he'd ever known. How comforted Puck had been by the younger boy's unwavering resolution to stay together. The two boys lived and trained with the clan's most hardened soldiers for years, softer emotion beaten, whipped, or cut from them. At the ages of 12 and 10, they were both given a sword and abandoned by their father in the midst of the most dangerous sand dunes with these parting words,
"Return with the heart of our enemy, or stay gone."
If Puck could flash back in time, he would demand Sin remain cosseted with their mother, safe in her loving arms. Now guilt was his constant companion. Until he'd learned to fight, and fight well, he'd been unable to protect Sin from daily abuses. Worse, their mother died before they could visit her. She delivered a stillborn babe soon after their departure and, in her grief, purposely burned herself to ash. A warrior could have survived the flames, but not a female without runes and magic.
Massaging the back of his neck, Puck considered the best way to proceed.
"Have you opened the case?"
"No, I waited for you," Sin said, with a tremor of fear. Fear? Impossible. Sin feared nothing while Puck guarded his back.
"I shouldn't have brought the cursed thing to your tent." His brother strode toward the table.
"I'll take it and—"
"No," arm extended. Puck stopped Sin before he could make contact with the case.
Yes, Sin had already handled it without consequence. Didn't matter. There was no reason for further risk.
"I want to know what's inside."
Wanted to know what this unknown queen thought to use against his family.
"I'll fetch one of the commanders. Let him—"
"No, I'll do it myself."
A good king did not put his own life ahead of his people.
"Leave me. I'll let you know what I find."
"You stay, I stay." Another log fell into the fire pit of his guilt. He popped his jaw.
"I don't want you endangered, brother.
Not now, not ever." For a single heartbeat of time, Sin's eyes glistened with unshed tears. He quickly blinked them back.
"And yet," he said, "still I plan to stay."
Why those almost tears? Suddenly, Puck couldn't tolerate the thought of having his brother anywhere but nearby.
"Very well, stand back."
Sin moved to the other side of the tent. Puck palmed a short sword and braced for the worst. Bomb blast? A magical trap? Then he did it. He opened the lid. At first, nothing happened.
But between one heartbeat and the next, black smoke rose from the case, the scent of sulfur saturating the air, stinging his nostrils. Glowing red eyes blinked open, focused on him, and narrowed. Puck reared back, even as he thrust the sword forward. The metal merely ghosted through the darkness.
What the?
A horned creature appeared, the owner of those eyes. With a high-pitched screech, it swooped down. Target? Puck. He tried to leap out of the way. Too late. The creature... Pain seared him, shoving a roar past his lips. The creature had entered his body and now tore into his organs. It bit and clawed, too, and yet Puck experienced no outward signs of injury. Frantic, he dropped the sword to rake his nails over his chest, slicing skin and muscle to no avail. The creature remained inside him, a dark presence, howling with a toxic mix of hate and pleasure. The blood in Puck's veins might as well have been fuel. Every cell in his body seemed to catch fire, melting him from the inside out as he... changed? Two rings of fire erupted on the crown of his skull, as if circles had been burned into the bone. He reached up and felt...
horns?
Breath wheezed through clenched teeth as he yanked at hanks of brown fur sprouting on his legs. The fur remained. Next, a hard shell grew over his feet. Hooves? As his leather boots ripped apart at the seams. Changing shapes wasn't new to him, but this transformation had control of Puck, not the other way around. He couldn't stop it. Jagged black lines appeared on his chest, small rivers of lava burning as they spread. An image formed. A butterfly with wings as sharp as shattered glass. Different colors shimmered in the firelight, one after the other, altering as various emotions flooded him. Mostly, panic grabbed Puck by the neck and held firm, choking him. Was this a hallucination caused by smoke? Or was he becoming a monster for good? His knees gave out, unable to support his weight. As he lay on the ground, panting, the panic died. His gaze landed on the Walsh sword, and the pride he'd experienced only moments before faded before disappearing altogether. The devotion he bore for his realm and people, gone. He felt nothing. The sword was a scrap of finely honed metal, the realm a meaningless location, its citizens a non-entity. Puck searched for emotion, hidden anywhere. There. Love for Sin, a shining beacon. He would protect the younger male from this, whatever this was. But as he attempted to reach for his brother, muscle locked on bone, holding him immobile, and panic returned.
Sin!
Sin wouldn't meet his gaze. Something's wrong. A terrible nothingness began to creep through Puck a second time, this one directed at his brother. Precious Sin, treasured Sin, Puck's reason for everything.
but an invisible dagger cut into his heart, affection draining out, draining. Still he fought.
"Love you," he rasped. "Can't lose sin, can't—"
But even as he spoke, his heart emptied. One moment his love blazed, a light inextinguishable by war, persecution, or travesty. The next, it was nothing but a snuffed-out torch.
Puck blinked up at Sin and felt nothing. He hadn't forgotten their past, or the many ways his brother had aided him throughout the centuries, or everything Sin had given up on his behalf, but he cared not at all.
Sin crouched beside him, sadness once again darkening his eyes.
"I'm sorry, Puck. I truly am. I knew what was inside the case. Keely Kale, she knew of our prophecy, claimed we were already on the path to destruction, and one of us would kill the other. This way we can live. I couldn't kill you, and I couldn't let you kill me. You would have hated yourself."
"I'm sorry," he repeated. "So sorry."
His brother had betrayed him?
Not possible. He would never do such a terrible thing.
"I made a deal with a she-devil," Sin continued. "I'll never forgive myself, but better me than you, eh? Don't you see? You won't concern yourself with the crown or the clans. You're now possessed by the demon of indifference."
He tapped Puck on the chest, and his voice hardened. "The two of you are joined for the rest of eternity." Sorrow, determination, and fury, so much fury, suddenly blazed inside Puck. An explosion. His brother had betrayed him, had actively plotted his ruin. But just like everything else, the sorrow, determination, and fury faded, until only cold disinterest remained. Puck the Undefeated had just become Puck the Fucked. He should leave. He might not have an aspiration to slay his brother, or to stay here, or even to go, but common sense said, "Do not remain with the one who harmed you." Muscles unlocking from bone at last, he stood.
"I did this for us," Sin straightened, reached for him. "Tell me you understand. Tell me we'll stay together."
Silent, he backed away from his brother. He would go for a walk, think about what had happened and what he should do next. "Puck!" He strode out of the tent, never once glancing back. Chapter 2. Centuries passed. The exact number escaped Puck. He didn't care to keep count. He didn't return to his brother or clan, even when he heard rumors of Sin's brutality. Apparently, his brother had morphed into the most bloodthirsty tyrant in Amaranthian history. He destroyed half a forest, one of only two, to build a fortress. He made slaves of the Connauts, and any other clansmen he captured, and killed anyone who plotted his downfall. He believed thousands of people plotted his downfall. In reality, Puck knew the truth. Sin's black soul had finally come out to play. Aimless, Puck wandered from one end of Amaranthia to the other. Those who got in his way died. If he came across something necessary for his survival, he took it. Food, weapons, a night's lodging. Sometimes he accepted a lover. He could harden, and a female could ride herself to satisfaction. But he cared nothing about her pleasure, and could not achieve his own. Though he felt a physiological need for release, no one had the power to make him come, not even himself. He remembered how he'd once secretly dreamed of being with the same woman over and over again. When he actually did it, he found the experience lacking. As Puck grew used to indifference, he realized the demon did not, could not, steal or erase his emotions, only bury and hide them, which the demon no longer preferred to do. He developed a taste for issuing punishment whenever Puck felt too much for too long. "Never indifferent about that, are you, fiend?" Even now the creature prowled through his mind, every step like the swing of a sledgehammer as he waited for Puck to misstep. He had to learn to bury and hide his emotions all on his own and cover them with thick layers of mystical ice, summoned by magic he made sure he always had on tap, the kind of magic he could wield anywhere, anytime. With ice came numbness. With numbness, peace. A necessary process, a wall of fury, hate, pain, concern, and hope still seethed inside him. He was a powder keg, and one day he would blow. When that happened, would indifference kill him? Would Puck welcome death or fight? At least the demon cautioned him any time an emotion slipped free. Snarls equal to slap on the wrist. Roars meant Puck trod upon dangerous ground. When he heard purring, he'd felt too much for too long, and hell was about to be unleashed upon him. The demon would deplete him of strength, leaving him immobile for days, practically comatose. To circumvent punishment, Puck created rules he followed without fail.
Trust no one, ever. Remember everyone lies. Kill anyone who threatens my survival, and always retaliate for the minutest slight. Eat 3 meals a day, and acquire clothes and weapons whenever possible. Always follow through.
At some point, Puck came across Princess Alana of Dyngan. She screamed and ran away from him, terrified of the monster he'd become. Oh well. Though magic still swirled inside Puck, he'd lost his ability to shapeshift. The horns remained atop his head, two ivory towers of shame. The fur on his legs and the hooves on his feet remained as well. No matter how many times he hacked them off, thinking maybe, just maybe, he could free his mind of indifference if he freed his body of its beastly attributes. As time passed, different males attacked him, determined to kill the disgraced Connaught prince. Puck was stabbed, staked and hung, drawn and quartered and set on fire. Whenever possible, he fought back, and if he couldn't fight back because of the demon, he waited until his body healed, then meted retribution ruthlessly, mercilessly, overcome by a rage he couldn't control. Of course, indifference always penalized him afterward. One morning, as Puck walked the sand dunes he'd once adored, his feet throbbed, or rather his hooves. A quick glance down proved he had sustained multiple injuries, leaving a river of blood in his wake. He needed to steal and magically alter a pair of shoes, and clothing he'd forgotten to dress. 2 golden suns highlighted a small camp in the distance. Perfect. Different garments swung from a rope anchored to the tops of 2 side-by-side tents. The scent of meat wafted on the breeze as a coining roasted above a fire pit. No one waited outside, though voices seeped from one of the tents.
"Announced this morning. Prince Taliesin of Connaught killed his father in his sleep." "Guess that means Taliesin is king now," was the grumbled reply. "Prince Neil was to be the successor, but he's dead, I think."
Puck stopped in his tracks. Sin had killed their father? They'd both despised the male, but cold-blooded murder while the Connaught slept? That was low. Puck waited for a punch of surprise, disgust, rage, something. Not a single hint of emotion seeped past his ice. As he pulled on a pair of 2 tight sheepskin pants, he wondered what he should feel. All of the above, perhaps? A need to stop his brother, definitely.
"If Prince Neil isn't dead," one of the men said, "he's still a beast."
Neil. Puck.
"Would you rather have Taliesin or a beast ruling over your family?" the other male asked. "Beast," both men said in unison.
The fact that anyone would want Puck over Sin. The Connaughts must be desperate.
"Can I really walk away and leave my clan in danger?"
And what if Sin married a woman who loved him, killed Puck, and united the clans? Amaranthia would surely collapse.
Sin had to die. Always follow through.
Well, all right then.
Puck would save the Connaughts from a madman and the entire realm from devastation, and finally meet vengeance against his brother.
And deep in his heart of hearts, Puck did want vengeance. For the bright future he'd lost and the love Sin had so coldly destroyed. Puck deserved to rage against the male. He'd earned the right. Indifference snarled a warning. Puck summoned a tendril of magic to cloak his heart and mind with more ice. As glacial logic returned, realization set in.
If the demon managed to drain him of strength, sin would best him.
He knows my weaknesses already.
Buck's hands curled into fists. He needed to find sin's weakness. No one offered better direction than the oracles. Puck ate every bite of quinine. Rules were rules. Found, magically altered, and donned a pair of boots, then headed east. The oracles lived in the most dangerous part of Amaranthia, where potent magic thickened the air, creating rifts that led to other realms, endless pits, the center of a volcano, and even the bottom of an ocean. Only the most desperate citizens dared to venture here. Those who sought to save themselves or a loved one, kings who needed guidance when choosing an heir, or people like Puck, with nothing to lose. The 3-day journey took a toll on him. No campsites, no food or water. At least he managed to avoid the rifts. Finally, he reached the realm's tallest sand tower. The oracles lived up top, with a view of everything. Too weak to climb, Puck used the last of his magic to create a sand staircase. He needed to acquire more magic, which meant he would have to kill someone, and soon. Should he slay one of the oracles? History claimed the trio created Amaranthia as a safe haven for anyone with magical inclinations. Their supply of magic must be limitless, even unending. At one time, the thought of harming a female would have disgusted him. Now, bring it. A source was a source. Business first. As he stepped onto the upper level without rails or walls, he discovered 3 females standing together, each draped from breast to thigh in colorful scarves. A fine, dark mist obscured their faces. In lieu of a greeting, he said,
"You know why I'm here."
"They must."
"How do I regain what's mine? Freedom from the demon, the Cunard crown, unification for the clans, protection for my realm, Sin's black heart on a golden platter. Princess Alana."
He would take her as his due. As winds grew more violent, the women asked in unison,
"What is our credo, Puck the Undefeated?"
All of Amaranthia learned their credo from the crib. Nothing given, nothing gained. The more personal the gift, the more detailed the answer. What was more personal than his blackened heart?
"We'll be unable to render a kill afterward."
"Worth it." Determined, he withdrew a dagger from a sheath at his waist and thrust the blade into his rib cage. Warm blood poured down his chest. Pain devoured his strength with the same tenacity as indifference, scorching every nerve ending in his body. Eventually, his knees gave out, but even as he fell, he continued to hack through muscle and bone. Finally, success. As an immortal, he would recover, soonish. Here and now, his mind would remain conscious for a minute, maybe 2, plenty of time to get what he needed. Sin had taught him well. The entire course of your life could change between one breath and another. With a flick of his wrist, the still-beating heart rolled toward the oracles. Twitters of acceptance rang out, followed by voices, one oracle speaking after the other.
"You love our home, our people, despite your limitations. But what has been spoken cannot be undone. What is to happen will happen. One prophecy can work alongside another, and what was can be made right. To save us all, wed the girl who belongs to William of the Dark. She is the key. Bring your wife to our lands and lead the Dark One hereafter. Only the male who will live or die for the girl has the power to dethrone Sin the Demented."
When had Sin earned the moniker, the Demented?
"Only then shall you have all you desire. But do not forget Ananke's shears, for they are necessary."
Together the oracles whispered,
"There is no other way."
In the ensuing quiet, Puck's thoughts whirled. William of the Dark. He'd never heard of him, or the girl the male would live or die for. The 2 needed to be brought to Amaranthia, one after the other. Very well. As a heavy gloom toyed with the edges of his mind, he ordered and set his tasks. Find William of the Dark. Wed the girl he loves. War with Sin.
One prophecy would not supersede the other. Instead, the two would work in tandem, meaning William would not kill Sin, would only dethrone him. The rest would be up to Puck. Nothing would stop him from completing each task. William, wed, war. One day Puck would wear the Connaught crown, save his people, and unite the clans. Finally, the gloom stopped toying and started devouring, swallowing him whole. He knew nothing more. Chapter 3 Gillian Shaw, BP, before Puck. T-minus 4 days and 32 seconds until B-Day.
I can do this. I can do it.
Sexy lingerie? Check. Intoxicating perfume? Check. Teeth brushed once, twice for good measure? Check, check. Gillian Shaw, also known as Gillian Bradshaw, Gilly Bradshaw, and Jill Brads, depending on which ID she used, marched from one side of the bedroom to the other, feeling as if she were a cracked porcelain doll about to shatter. I'm almost 18. I can do this, her stomach said. Think again, little girl. Not wanting to desecrate the Persian rug, she rushed to the bathroom. Just in time, the contents of her stomach spewed into the toilet. Her boyfriend, who was she kidding? He wasn't her boyfriend. Yet. He was an immortal warrior of incomparable beauty and power, a bazillion years old and one of 9 kings of hell. Or a former king. Immortal titles could change as kingdoms were won or lost, and she had lost track. What she knew beyond a doubt. William of the Dark was a merciless killer. Both enemies and friends feared him, and yet, when he smiled, panties dropped. The guy slept around, a lot. He had no sticking power, except with Gillian, whom he refused to bed. Time to teach him otherwise. Though he'd never made a move on her, he'd always enjoyed being with her, clearly. He joked and laughed with her in a way he never did with anyone else. This morning he'd sought her opinion about which T-shirt to wear, the one that read, I can make beer disappear, or world's okayest friend. Did he understand what a rarity he was, what a wealth of contradictions? He was uncompromisingly brave while inspiring terror, fierce but honorable, with a skewed moral compass, willing to commit unspeakable acts of evil, and yet there were small lines he refused to cross. To Gillian, he was a last hope. Must win him over. Had she done ample internet research, picked the right outfit, brushed her teeth enough? Ugh. Maybe she should go home before he returned and found her half-dressed in his bedroom and forever altered the course of their relationship. Too late, already altered. A while back, he'd been bedbound after a particularly gruesome battle. In his weakened condition, he hadn't trusted anyone but Gillian to be near him. As she tended his wounds, he'd admitted he sensed her feelings for him, and told her they could only ever be friends, that she was too young to be with a man and understand what it meant. Thanks to her stepfather, she'd known what it meant for years. He'd done sick, twisted things she couldn't contemplate without praying for death. He'd also taught his sons to do sick, twisted things. But day after day she kept fighting to live anyway. She hated her step-horrors too much to let them win. Feeling rejected by William, she tried to avoid him. He'd sought her out anyway, acting as if nothing had happened. Actually, no, that wasn't 100% accurate. She'd shared the worst of her past, and he'd begun to treat her like spun glass. Now there were 2 Gillians, 2 wolves at war. 1 Gillian was afraid of her feelings for William, and the other only wanted to feel more. One looked at him and thought, he's the scariest man on earth. The other looked at him and thought, he's the sexiest man on earth. Talk about mental whiplash. Which mattered more, scary or sexy? How about neither? He was nice. The only quality that mattered. Lately, though, he'd been spending less and less time with her. What if he grew tired of her? What if he ditched her? There was only one way to keep a man interested in a woman. Her stomach twisted. You're proving his point. You aren't ready. This isn't right. No. No. Listen to fear? Not anymore. Tonight she took control of her destiny and proved she could meet all of Liam's needs.
Gillian splashed her face with water and peered at her reflection in the mirror. Dark, haunted eyes stared at her, and she scowled. No one, in this world or any other, had ever hated their eyes more than she hated hers.
"You want me to stop touching you? Then tell those beautiful eyes to stop begging for more."
A cold sweat beaded over her forehead, and her stomach threatened to rebel a second time. Okay, so guaranteed she was going to freak out tonight.
"You're worth the hassle," she muttered. "And so is Liam."
With his kindness and gentleness, he'd earned her trust, loyalty, and love. And by some miracle of miracles, she'd earned his, too. He must trust and love her, despite his rejection of her. Why else would he throw her a private pre-birthday party yesterday and surprise her with a new car? A Mercedes-Benz S600 Guard, to be exact. According to her envious classmates, it was the safest vehicle on the market, because it could resist sniper fire, rocket-propelled grenades, and high-velocity projectiles. Oh, and it had cost $600,000, an absolutely obscene amount of money. But William was a savvy businessman on top of everything else and had oodles of cash to spare. But the thing worth more to her than the Mercedes? The handmade coupon booklet he'd given her. Inside were tickets for all-night video game challenges, dinners anywhere in the world, and a shopping extravaganza while he carried her purse. There were also 20 coupons for the head or heart of an enemy. But even better than all of that? She'd picked up idle chatter among the group of friends they shared. William considered Gillian his destined mate. The problem was he continued seeing other women. Have to win him now before he falls in love with someone else. A little wobbly on her feet, Gillian used the spare toothbrush to scrub her mouth a third and fourth time. "He loves me. He'll always love me. Surely." Not too long ago, she'd gone out with some kids from her school. She'd been uncomfortable but determined to have fun. But when everyone paired up, leaving her alone with one of the boys, she'd panicked. What if he made a move on her? Just when she thought she might snap, William had shown up.
"You do not touch her. Ever," he'd said, his voice pure menace. "You do, you die."
Unlike her stepfather, he protected her. He was a bright light in a life encompassed by darkness. With him, she almost felt normal. Gillian needed to feel normal. So many girls her age were excited to discover the pleasures of sex, but she already despised the act. The smells, sounds, and sensations, the pain, humiliation, and helplessness. What if William could introduce her to those pleasures? Her phone vibrated. A text from William? Hopeful, but also teeming with dread, she checked the screen. "Keely, quick question, no wrong answer. If you were a queen, like me, and someone did something to hurt you in order to save you, would you forgive him or kill him?" Keely the Red Queen was a curator, tasked with the world's safekeeping, drawing strength from nature. She called her mind a corkboard, because she'd lived so long and had so many memories stuck in her brain. Not just of the past, but also the future. Or a future she'd once seen but had forgotten. Now she was remembering. Her marriage to Torin helping her achieve mental clarity. For some reason, she'd decided to take Gillian under her wing and train her to be royalty with lessons posing as a quick question. Gillian responded. "Those are my only options? Kill him or forgive him? Fine, I'll play along, but before I can render a verdict, I'll need more info. What did this person do to hurt me?"
Keely.
"Who knows? I wasn't there."
"I still need more info."
Keely. "Wrong answer. You must forgive me. I mean him. Him. Otherwise bitterness will grow like a weed and choke out any joy. Now then, I hope you enjoyed this lesson in surviving the wonderful world of immortality from Professor Queen Kiki."
"Forgive you? What did you do, Kay? Or what are you going to do? Tell me."
"Keely." Three smiley faces. "I love you, my sweet little non-human you."
Non-human?
Sometimes there was no understanding the Red Queen. With a huff, Gillian pocketed her phone and caught sight of her reflection. Those eyes. She remembered why she was in William's apartment, and fear annihilated her amusement.
The cons of doing this tonight. 1. She might keep vomiting. 2. If she failed, she might not gather the courage to try again. And 3. Doing nothing could mean losing William's friendship. The pros? 1. She had chosen him of her own free will. 2. She had planned the encounter. And 3. She would control everything that happened. No matter what, sex with him would be different. Different meant better. And what if memories of William overshadowed memories of her stepfather? What if William helped rid her of all the guilt, shame, and self-loathing that had burrowed inside her heart and taken root? She wouldn't be a shell of herself any longer. She would regain confidence. The hate inside her would drain. Never again would she feel crushed by life. Her phone buzzed. A quick screen check had her groaning. Torin.
Where are you?
Torin, another immortal friend, had recently gotten hitched to Keeley. He was a good guy with a love for sarcasm. Gillian texted back. Out, why?
Torin, why else? Because I like making sure your smart mouth is safe.
Her fingers flew over the keyboard.
Or you promised William you'd check on me while he's out.
Torin, that too. Now back to business. Out where? No way she'd lie. Lie was the only language her step-horrors spoke. But no way Gillian would tell Torin the full truth either. She typed, I'm in my apartment, Dad. Thanks for asking. She had an apartment of her own right next door to William's. Technically, her apartment belonged to him, too, since he paid for both. But what belonged to him belonged to her. He'd said so. Twice.
Torin.
Like I can't track your exact location, sweetheart. Go home. Whatever you're planning, it's a bad idea. Horrible. Terrible. The worst.
What? He knew?
Trembling worse than before, she turned off her phone. This was a great idea, maybe the best she'd ever had.
Breathe, just breathe.
Everything would be fine. William had experience, a lot of experience. His friends didn't call him William the Ever-Randy and Free Willy for nothing. He would make sure Gillian enjoyed herself to the best of her ability, right?
Dang it, where was he? What was he doing?
She remembered the first time they'd met. Desperate to escape her step-horrors, she'd stolen money and bought a bus ticket from New York to L.A. There she'd gotten a job at the only place willing to hire her, a trashy diner where men like her step-horrors had regularly tried to order a happy-ending meal. Then Danica Ford had come along, a street-smart scrapper who had the supernatural ability to see into heaven and hell. Danica had been on the run from a group of demon-possessed immortals known as the Lords of the Underworld, each one more terrifying than the last. There was Paris, host to the Demon of Promiscuity, Saban, host to Doubt, Amon, Secrets, Aaron, Wrath, Reyes, Pain, Cameo, Misery, Strider, Defeat, Cain, Disaster, Torin, Disease, Maddox, Violence, Lucian, Death, Gideon, Lies. Against all odds, Danica had fallen in love with Mr. Payne. The happy couple invited Gillian to move to Budapest with them, and because she'd been dealing with a creepy super, spending every night pressed against her front door, a baseball bat at the ready, she'd thought, why the heck not? Her step-horrors would never be able to find her overseas. Except, the second she'd arrived, she'd felt as if she'd gone from bad to worse. She'd been too afraid of her new roommates to sleep, and had camped out in the entertainment room, a central location with multiple exits. One day, William plopped onto the couch and said,
"Tell me you're skilled at video games. Everyone else sucks, and I need a challenge."
For months, they'd played video games at all hours of the day, and she'd felt like a kid for the first time in forever. She went from hating all men to loving one as an unlikely friendship bloomed. He quickly became the most important, treasured, and wonderful thing in her life, the person she counted on above all others. Hinges squeaked as the front door opened and closed. William had returned. Heart thudding against her ribs, she raced into the bedroom. Footsteps echoed from the foyer. Though her legs felt like jelly, air wheezed between her teeth, and she teetered in high heels, she struck a pose, placing one hand on a bedpost and the other on her hip. William strode into the bedroom, holding another woman's hand. Humiliation flash-froze Gillian's blood, tremors nearly toppling her.
The woman was breathtakingly lovely, as dark as Gillian was fair and probably immortal to boot. When William spotted Gillian, he stopped short. As his gaze roved over her and narrowed, she had to fight the urge to look down and hide her eyes.
"You shouldn't be here," he said, his voice cold and hard and terrifyingly calm, the kind of tone she suspected murderers used. "I gave you the spare key for emergencies, Poppet, not this."
"I didn't agree to a three-way, Will," the other woman smiled brightly, "but I'm totally into it. Let's do this."
"Someone kill me, please." William pointed at Gillian and barked. "Don't you dare move."
Then he dragged the beauty out of the bedroom, despite her sputtering protests. Gillian pressed her hands over her galloping heart. Should she run? No. Absolutely not. Girls ran away, and women fought for what they wanted. A loud slam echoed. Footsteps sounded again. By the time William reappeared in the doorway, alone, Gillian had given up trying to stand and plopped onto the edge of the bed. Silent, he strode to his closet. When he emerged, he draped a pink silk robe over her shoulders and forced her arms through the holes. Definitely wasn't his robe. Did it belong to one of his many women? Vulnerable to the max, Gillian watched him through the thick shield of her lashes. He was so beautiful, with jet-black hair, bronzed skin, and eyes the color of a morning sky. He was the tallest man she knew, as well as the strongest.
"What's this about, Poppet?"
He remained in front of her, his muscular arms crossed. At least he didn't sound murdery anymore.
"Why here? Why now?"
"Because. Just because."
"Not good enough."
"Because. Just do it. Tell him." "Because guys need sex, and there's no better way to keep one interested. And also because I want you." "Maybe. Surely." "Do you want me to?" He traced his tongue over his teeth.
"You aren't ready for the truth."
"I am ready." She jumped up to clutch the collar of his shirt. "Please."
"Your family took something precious from you," he said, prying her fingers loose, his grip firm without bruising. "I won't do the same."
"You won't. By being with me, you'll help me forget." "Begging now?" A new stain of humiliation spread over her cheeks. "We're destined mates, aren't we?" The look he gave her, so gentle, so tender, it devastated her.
"I don't want a destined mate. I'm cursed, remember?"
Yes. The moment he fell in love, a switch would supposedly flip in his lady love, and she would do everything in her power to murder him. He owned a book with a detailed depiction of the curse, and possibly a key to breaking it. Problem was, those deeds were written in some kind of code, with strange symbols and odd riddles. So far, no one had been able to decipher anything. But they would. "You have the book. You have hope. We have a future."
"I'll take no chances with my heart, emotionally or physically." Gaze locked with hers. He toyed with a lock of her hair. "One day, though, we will be together. One day soon. 4 days, in fact. Then I'll make sure you're ready."
Realization. He planned to sleep with her just like he'd slept with so many others. When their relationship fizzled out, and he clearly expected it to fizzle out, they would, what, return to their friendship as if nothing had happened? "At least I'll have him in my life." "I'm pathetic. Never mind, I'm going home." His big hands framed her face, keeping her locked in place. Fear crawled up her spine, the kind she'd lived with 24/7 in New York. "You'll leave your hands where I put them, pretty girl, or I'll break them." Her lungs constricted, making it impossible to breathe.
"All right, Poppet, calm down." William combed his fingers through her hair. "Take a deep breath for me. Open your mouth for me."
Gillian erupted, beating at William. "Let me go. You have to let me go." As her fists bloodied his nose and cut his lip, she had no pride, no ambition but escape. "Don't touch me. You have to stop touching me." "Shh, shh, I've got you." He yanked her against the hard line of his body and wrapped his arms around her, holding her captive. "I won't let anything bad happen to you, I swear it." Still she fought. He only held her tighter. Ultimately, her strength drained and she sagged against him. Sobs racked her. "I'll help you overcome this," he said, "but not tonight.
With us, sex won't be a bandage meant to hide a wound. She stiffened, opened her mouth, snapped it closed. Why couldn't he see? She needed a bandage. Her wound seeped poison. One day soon it would kill her. But he was right about one thing. She wasn't ready for sex. Scratch that. She might not ever.